The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program. WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where this week, like every other week, we are looking to give you the information and inspiration you need to start or grow your own real estate investing career. And usually this is the time that I talk about, you know, what's coming up at Cincinnati RIA, and this is a quiet week because, all of our focus groups are going on, but May came out in this weird way where there's 2 weeks where there's no main meeting for Cincinnati RIA. There's 2 weeks in May where the Thursday night is not a RIA meeting, which is unusual. But for those of you who are interested in or doing wholesaling, there is a free wholesaling help night tonight at 7:30 Eastern Time. It is online, so shouldn't be a problem for you to attend. It's not a lecture about wholesaling. It's just a place where some folks who've done it or, buy from wholesalers or whatever will be, so that if you have questions, you know, concept questions, how do I do this questions, or even I have this deal and it's not working, somebody help me figure out how to make it work questions, you can ask those. The way that you would get your link for Wholesaling Help Night is by going to CincinnatiRIA.com. Just go to the calendar, look at tonight, click on that Wholesale Help Night, and you can sign up and get a link to that. So everybody's welcome from anywhere in the country. In fact, it's not just Cincinnati RIA doing this event. There's other groups participating as well, so you will not be by yourself if you are not from Ohio. There will be lots of folks like that. And that's CincinnatiRIA.com. So as I mentioned in my weekly e-letter, this show is somewhat unprecedented in the history of real life real estate investing. This is the first time we have ever done a part two to a show. It is part two, of course, to last week's show on options, and the reason that it seemed important to do that was that we left a bunch of people on the phone. We left several questions unanswered in the vinaradio@gmail.com Q&A box, and we didn't even get to all the stuff that we thought we wanted to talk about during the show. Lori Wolf, who, if you did not listen to last week's show, is a real estate investor from Central Ohio who has made purchasing options on people's houses to solve some of their financial problems a big part of her business over the last 2 years. And also Bill Cook, who is joining us by phone from Florida, who has been using options, or as he calls it, doing options work, for decades in a row. So they are both back with us. Lori drove all the way down from Columbus again. Yes. So that she could sit here so that Bill could be on the phone, so that we didn't have two people on the phone, so that people could call in, which was very nice of you, Lori.
Happy to do it.
We very much appreciate that. I can't even get some of my guests who live in Cincinnati to come into the station once they find out they can, you know, call in. So, really appreciate you. We are going to spend a little time here up front, sort of getting through some of the like important option stuff that we meant to talk about last week, but then, you know, overwhelming number of listener questions. But you still obviously can call in with questions. The phone number is 877 772-9658, 877-772-9658, or you can send them via email. That is venaradio@gmail.com, venaradio@gmail.com. So, guys, here we are again.
Round two. Yep, let's go.
Round two. And there were a number of things that, like, I had on my list of, you know, people are going to need to hear this in order to really understand how these things work that we did not get to. We did sort of get to the kind of person that it would be an advantage to them if somebody would buy an option on their property.
Yeah, we talked about the human side.
Right. Lori mentioned people who are behind in payments but want to stay in their house but need the payments caught up if
yes.
they are going to stay in their house. Bill mentioned people who might have some major piece of work to do to a house that they live in that they just cannot afford, and they could use, I don't know, $20,000-$30,000 to take care of things and might be willing to exchange that for an option. We also talked about how important the paperwork here is, and that there are three pieces of paperwork. There's an option, there's a mortgage to secure option, and then there is a disclosure that just to make sure that the homeowner understands what it is they are agreeing to, that needs to be somewhat detailed. So the third P that we didn't really get to talk about very much was the property.
Right, the asset itself.
Yes, there's always the person, the paperwork, the property.
Yep.
Right? So I'll start with Bill since I think he's eating right now, and it would be really funny.
Yes, let's do that.
Because it sounds like Bill, he's eating sunflower seeds or something.
I'm eating pezzes. Thank you very much.
eating pezzes. Very good. On the radio, live.
Yes.
You know, we can't edit this out, right? Like, it's happening in real time.
Well, I'm aware of that, and you're starting wrong. We need to start with a poll. And I would like to ask your listeners to call in or email in on a poll. You said this is the first time ever there's been a part two on your radio show. So last week was part one, this is part two. And I would like your listeners to answer this question.
Oh, here we go.
Are we having a part two because of the two smart, successful, beautiful redheads in the studio? Or is it because of a fat old bald guy on the radio that's calling in? I'm guessing it's the latter.
I
but
feel
I
objectified.
Sure.
Do you feel objectified? Like,
I thought number two was going to be because of the topic. But no, we didn't go there. We left that out.
So, you guys don't actually have to answer that question. Don't let up the email box, please, with whether you think it's Bill or Lori and Vina that caused the part two.
Or part three is the topic.
No, email that in.
Or part three.
I'd like to see that. Yeah, that'd be great.
Mm-hmm. So, Bill, property types.
Ma'am.
Property types. So we talked about the people and the paperwork last week, but we did not talk about whether there is any, like, best kind of property or kind of property that you as an investor would not want to offer anybody an option on.
Okay, well, this is going to be subjective because there are people that do this different ways, and my way surely isn't the way, it's just a way. And I'm also a lender, so I look at options the same way I look at when I'm lending on a property. And I want the property to be in a great neighborhood. And I want it to be a non-rental neighborhood. And I want it to have great transportation around it. And I want good churches and good schools. So that neighborhood is doing well now and continue to do well. And I try, and I usually will shy away from and not do if it's a neighborhood that's real rough or a lot of vacancies or a lot of rentals or just, you know, people aren't taking care of the homes. I'm going to stay away from those, whether as a lender or as doing options. I'm real curious to see what Lori says.
So my answer is similar, but I'm going to say it in a different way. I will not do an option on a property that's underwater. So typically when somebody says that, it's the mortgage balance is you know, what is owed is more than what the home is worth today. So with an option and you're looking at kind of that underwater scenario, I'm looking at what is the balance on the loan? What does it take to make it current? And then what are the repairs? And like you talk about the area, the neighborhood, the longevity of it, that kind of factors into, but that's kind of a fuzzy number. But when I add all that up, you know, from a maybe a subjective standpoint, is the property underwater? So I am saying the same thing you are, but I'm trying to put dollars and cents around those specific things to say this is not something I can move forward on.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so let's talk about why. Because the simplest way to understand an option is to say it is a purchase contract that we are agreeing to today, but that I, as the buyer in that purchase contract, don't have to close for however long the option period is, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. And I'm putting up money that's non-refundable. But, you know, that's not a lot different than earnest money, right? Like, earnest money is usually refundable, but it probably, like, if you put up earnest money today on a purchase contract that wasn't going to close for 15 years, you wouldn't get your earnest money back until you decided not to do the deal. So the money would be tied up one way or another, right?
Yep.
So why does it have to do with the fact that it's a purchase agreement and so ultimately I need to be willing to purchase the property? Is this just a preference, Bill, based on that's not a property I would want in my portfolio, therefore I'm not doing this extended purchase contract on it?
It's that, but it's more. It's my money at risk. And, you know, when the banks were doing really bad loans in 2004, 5, and 6, some of us remember, you know, it wasn't their money they were loaning out. And so they didn't care. They would loan money to anybody with a heartbeat. You had the LIRA loans that were out there, all kind of weird stuff. It wasn't their money. So if the property went belly up, who cares? But this is the money Kim and I have worked very hard for our entire lives. And I don't want to put it at risk. And to add to that, if I'm going to purchase an option, I'm going to go look at the property. I'm going to go there, even if it's in another state. Either I drive or I fly. I'm going to go talk to the homeowner. I'm going to knock on the doors in the neighborhood. I'm going to go look around that area. So, again, because the risk is mine, I'm going to make sure I know what I'm looking at in order to feel comfortable with the deal, feel comfortable with the risk.
Right, you're not
and,
a pest
dispenser. Lori and I were talking before about risk, and I'd like to have Lori also talk about risk.
Right, and like what you're saying, you know, we all have only so many pennies to share. So we have to do our due diligence on these things to make sure that it's good for everybody after the paperwork is signed and the ink is dry. Because these things could run 5, 10, 25 years out. So if we don't do that due diligence up front, we could be looking at some problems down the road in a lot of different ways.
Mm-hmm. And I want to come back to the question of what due diligence, like what is, you know, Bill just said what his process was, but other due diligence when we come back from the break. And again, listeners, you can ask your options questions at 877-772-9658 or by emailing them to vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. This is part two of our options discussion from last week with Bill Cook and Lori Wolf, both of whom will be at the upcoming National Real Estate Investing Summit in Cincinnati on October 31st to November 3rd. Bill is actually doing a three-hour talk on options and how they work and all the different ways that one can use them. And so on. And Lori is always in attendance there.
Yes.
and is, I understand, possibly going to be sharing one of her deals that she did during Bill's presentation. Did I just say something that you guys haven't agreed on?
No, he floated that idea with me in okay. February, so I'm well primed for it.
Okay, good. I'm glad
floated.
I said that.
I didn't float.
I was voluntold.
You said yes.
So, yeah, you can get tickets to that at oreaconvention.com. Just a quick warning, the price, I'm not going to go through the whole thing about how badly the cost of having that hotel has inflated over the last 3 years. Bottom line is the price is going way up on Friday, May the 31st. We kept the prices like we had last year, and then we got the hotel bill, and then we were like, oh, we can't actually do that anymore, but they're still that way until May the 31st, and then the prices on everything are going to go up, and there's not going to be a better offer than there is out there right now. So oreaconvention.com if you haven't gotten your tickets to that yet. So first thing, I hear you guys saying want to do due diligence, don't want properties in C-class areas. I don't want listeners to hear that properties in C-class areas are necessarily a bad thing to do an option on. If it was a paid off property and you like rentals in C-class areas and you would like to own that property in 5 years, and in it, you know, I maybe would do a more short term option there if I had any concerns about, is the neighborhood getting better? Is the neighborhood getting worse? Am I seeing houses being more taken care of, being less taken care of, things like that? But this is very much the thing about what property am I willing to invest in is just like what property are you willing to invest in for a rental? What area are you willing to invest in for a rehab? There's very much personal preference. I just don't want it. Any listeners to have heard, well, okay, so no, can't do it in the areas where I like to own houses. That is not the case. Let's talk some about the due diligence, because you both mentioned that you do due diligence. Lori, what is your due diligence on a property that you're considering giving somebody money for an option? What does that look like?
Well, I could talk about this for a long time. So there's due diligence that we do on the people, but there's also some due diligence on the property. And my level of due diligence may change based on the amount of money that the homeowner may need. So right off the bat, regardless of what all those different criteria or stipulations are with each property, I'm going to want to know what it's worth today. Mm-hmm. And I'm also going to want to know if it needs any repairs, because typically the people that I'm working with, if they're in a financial hardship, the home is not going to be a palace. You know, it's going to need some repairs or some delayed, deferred maintenance that has occurred over the years. So I have to be able to read between the lines and understand what is probably the current condition of the property and kind of factor that into how I'm going to structure this deal, because those repairs may not get addressed by the time I actually make the purchase. So I want to prepare for that. So absolutely, I got to know what it's worth today. I got to know what I'm looking at to put into it. And then where are we at? You know, it could be, like Vina said, it don't have to all be palace properties in A and B class neighborhoods. You can find, maybe it's a C class property, but it's in a really good school district. I mean, I know we've all seen those. Mm-hmm. And
I love those.
I know. I do too, because there's opportunity there. So if it happens to be a home like that, but, you know, I've got intel that tells me that's a really good school district and people just want to be in that school district, that's a good checkbox on my side. So, you know, comps, what's the problems with it? Where's it at? And then depending on how much money we're talking about, I'm going to either want to see and be in the property or do a drive-by or, you know, drive around the neighborhood and kind of get an idea for the area, depending on how well I know it or not. You know, there's some areas, obviously I drive through them every day going to the grocery store or the gas station, so I already know them. But those are right away definitely the things that I need to know before I move forward.
Mm-hmm. So it's not a whole lot different than the due diligence you would be doing if you were buying a house just to rehab it or rent it today.
Those are basic investor skills that you've got to have, and they definitely carry over into doing this type of stuff.
Mm-hmm. So the unusual thing in your case, since you're doing a lot of these options to rescue people from foreclosure and let them get back to even and continue to live in their house, the due diligence is on, can you actually afford these payments?
Right. There's due diligence on the person, and then there's the due diligence on the property that we just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's have a, not a reality check. You guys both know this, and you haven't said anything different than this, but for the listeners, you got to remember that we're putting money down today for the right to buy the house, whatever tomorrow is, at a price we've agreed on today.
Yes.
And there's a lot of stuff that can happen between today and tomorrow.
Right, and none of us have a crystal ball.
Yes, and you know, amongst those things is, okay, you go and you look at the house, you're like, yeah, it's got a little bit of deferred maintenance, it's not anything that's ridiculous, but you know perfectly well that between now and the time that you need to or want to exercise your option, it could have gotten way worse.
Mm-hmm. Or it could have stayed the same.
Or it could have gotten better. I mean,
right.
These folks still own their houses, so
right.
A lot of them are going to actually make some improvements. So I think that this whole strategy is something that somebody with no tolerance for, I don't know what will happen. No, in other words, there are these folks who are like, no, I need to be able to put everything on a spreadsheet and know exactly what is going to happen over the next 5, 10 to 15 years.
Yeah.
Maybe not a strategy for them.
No, and this is something investors don't talk about too much. It's implied, but it's not outright said, and that is risk. What is your personal risk tolerance? And then B, when you're looking at these deals, what is your risk in it? Or have you done enough due diligence to mitigate some of the risk? So more knowledge limits risk. It also makes the deal more valuable because you've kicked the tires. You've turned over as many stones as you can to put daylight on everything. That's a term Bill says all the time. I'm putting daylight on everything. So if you're a very risk adverse person, but you do so much due diligence that you lower your risk adversity and you've increased your interest or value in this property, you can, those levers can move. You can get there. And the only way you do that is by doing your due diligence and kind of, you know, kicking the tires and turning everything over to make sure that you can do as much as you can. Now, if you do not like the idea of having funds out there for 20 years, that whole concept is kind of what this is. Maybe you're only good with a 2-year option or a 12-month option. You know, if that's where the end of your comfort level is and that's where you want to stay, that was totally fine too. But these can run a really long time and there's value and a lot of opportunity in letting them run a long time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because all other things being equal, the property is getting more and more valuable
Correct.
Over time. And unless, of course, you hit a 2009 right. during the middle of your time right. in the property.
Right. And you can mitigate that too.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yes, generally, without looking at 2009, properties generally appreciate. So if you let something run 20 years, you're generally going to say it's going to be worth more than what we're agreeing to today.
Mm-hmm.
But if 2009 happened again, you could extend your option. You could say, I will give you an additional fee in order to extend this option another 5 or 10 years. So there's other ways you can mitigate that potential risk.
Mm-hmm. But you wouldn't extend your option if the seller had, his kids had graduated from high school, he moved out of the house, it's just sitting there vacant. And now it's worth half as much as it was last year. And also it's degrading because
game
it's
on.
Sitting there
right.
vacant.
Right. We got, then we're in a, we got to stop the bleeding.
Mm-hmm. So,
yep.
So options can be walked away from.
Yes.
I mean,
it's a right to buy. It's not an obligation to buy.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I'm just paging through the pages of notes of things here that Bill said that he wanted to make sure that we got before we got super involved in listener questions. And I think the key one that we just haven't even talked about at all is, how do you actually go about exercising the option? Like, what is the technicality, the technicalities there, Bill?
As far as that I want to exercise an option, and this is spelled out in the option agreement itself, that, and it may be that I let the owner, in this case, the owner of the property, also known as the optioner, the person who gave the option, I want them, maybe I have to give them a 30-day notice, a 90-day notice, that I'm ready to exercise my option. In other words, I'm ready to buy the property now. And we've already agreed on price and terms. And then it's just setting up the closing the way you would set up a normal closing. And so the real estate attorney is contacted. If you use an attorney, if you use a title company, the title company is contacted. Things are set, the closing set up. Normally I'm going to go by and visit with the homeowner. I like to do things face to face versus emails and texts, especially when they're big things like, hey, I want to buy your house now. I'm ready to exercise. But one of the things I've learned, and this has been over 20 years of doing this, rarely have I exercised an option. Most of the time, what happens is the person, I'm holding the option, and the person who gave me the option, something happens. Maybe they need me to exercise it sooner than I'm ready to. Or maybe in Lori's case, where someone is facing foreclosure for a second time, or maybe they want to extend the option. They don't want you to exercise it right away. They want it to go longer. Or maybe they want to refinance, but because your option is secured with a mortgage or deed of trust, and they're not able to refinance the property because your option's in the way, they need you to move the option. So for different reasons, I get phone calls from people that give me options, and oftentimes I'm paid to go away. And then that's not really part of the option agreement. It's just we will sit down and talk it through, and how badly do they want me to go away? And then we'll come up with an amount or terms or something. Mm-hmm. Or we'll modify the option to make everything work.
Now, what you
and
just said...
I hope that
said,
answers the question.
What you just said is going to drive legislators and regulators insane when they hear it. Because they're in their heads, what happened is you took advantage of some poor homeowner. You gave them money. And then later on, you know, you had the right to buy the house and they didn't want you to buy it. So you said, well, you need to give me my money back. And then you also maybe need to give me some more money because I had this investment in this property for 5 years, not making any income because there were no payments involved. And now you, the evil investor, are just going to blow their heads off. You're going to say, I gave you $20,000 3 years ago, and now you have to give me $60,000 back, or I'm taking your house away from you. That's what they're going to, like, imagine is happening here. Is that what happens?
No. And I've done this many, many times, and never once has that happened. And I have a lot of my friends down in Florida. Now, Pete Fortunato, for one, that a lot, you know, y'all have heard him on this radio program before, that is one of my teachers. And that's not happened to anybody I know of, including Jack Miller, the guy that taught me. It's just not what happens, because it's two people talking and problem through. And oftentimes, a solution can be found if you'll just sit down and get meet face-to-face and have a glass of sweet tea. It's amazing what can get accomplished.
Mm-hmm. So really, it's not, I mean, there's never, especially if the person's a homeowner, there's never some agreement or expectation up front that if you want me to go away, you're going to pay me this much back, because that, if that's the agreement, that's not an option anymore. That's a loan. It doesn't matter what you put at the top of the piece of paper. That's a loan. And if we're going to make a loan, we need to call it a loan and stop pretending it's an option.
Yep. I've had people ask that question. Can I pay this back? And I'm like, no, it's not a loan.
Mm-hmm.
That would have make null and void the whole point of the intent of what we're doing here.
Mm-hmm. Yes. If what you want is a loan, here's the names of some people who might give you a loan. But
correct. But that's not what we're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
Let me add one thing here, because what we're talking about is extremely important. When I'm sitting down talking to someone, and they're an owner-occupant, the conversation we're going to have is, I want to make sure we have shared expectations. I'm going to tell them I plan on buying their home one day, and I plan on making a large profit one day when I do this. So the benefit they're getting is either something's being fixed, or they're getting some money because I'm purchasing the option from them or putting the new roof on the house. Something's happening that is of great benefit to them and very important to them today. And I'm willing to make sure that happens. So there's a benefit to me, and I make sure they know what that is. But I tell them, if you come to me later on and say, can I buy this back? The answer is always no. I am going to exercise the option one day, and I'm going to buy this. Now, down the road, if I get a phone call where they say, hey, listen, I need you to buy the house sooner, or I need you to buy the house a little bit further down the line. We will negotiate. We'll talk. We'll figure out a win-win scenario. But mm-hmm. what you're covering right now is extremely, extremely important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so listeners, do not make options under disguised loans. I've even heard people say, well, what I do with the homeowners is I give them an option that says I get to buy their house in 6 months, and then if they want me not to buy it, they have to pay me money every month to not buy it. They have to pay me some money. That's a loan!
Yeah, can't do that.
It doesn't matter what it
is. Call it what it is, then, if that's what you're going to do.
Exactly, exactly. Well, once again, the questions are piling up, so let's go to line two and talk to Anita in Cincinnati. Anita, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Well, hello, Vina. Thank you for taking my call. And Lori and Bill, thank you so much for coming back on and doing a part two. It's really helped me to understand options a lot better, but I still have a question. So while one might be able to buy an option, and I emphasize an as in like one, it seems as though an investor could only do like one or two or some small number of options, because at some point they're just going to run out of money unless they have just a bag of money sitting around to buy these options. So how do people do that? How do you do multiples of options?
Funny you should ask, Anita. So you can bring in a partner. I'm sure that has been brought up multiple times on different deals in the past, but these are something that you can totally put together, do all the due diligence, put the paperwork in place, and then, yes, we all run out of money. We only have so many pennies. And you can bring in a partner to help fund whatever it is that the homeowner needs, whether it's, you know, the septic system, like Bill mentioned last week, or for me, a reinstatement amount on a mortgage. So there are other people and other folks out there, which took me a while to find them, and that understood what I was doing. But yes, you can absolutely bring in a partner to fund these things and keep you going.
Mm-hmm. And again,
okay, so in a situation like in a situation like that, go ahead.
Well, this is like when you're in the hallway with somebody and you both keep stepping back and forth trying to pass each other, and it just needs to,
you go the same direction.
Exactly. So again, though, listeners, Lori is not talking about getting a loan from an investor that is secured by an option, although I'm guessing that could be done. I'm guessing you could hypothecate an option in some way, because then you would have the problem of you're now making payments on something that you're not making any money
on. That would be a little tight for me.
Money on.
Hypothecate, jargon flag.
She got it called this
borrowing
week.
Money against a piece of paper like a mortgage or note or an option or land contract, as opposed to a property, is usually called hypothecation. This is literally somebody who says, oh, Lori, I like your deal. You need $78,000. You've only got eight of those thousands of dollars.
Yeah, usually.
So I will put in the other $70,000 and we will both be on the option.
Yep.
And our share of the house when it's purchased
We'll split up the equity.
Yeah, we'll be in probably the same proportion as whatever you put in and whatever I put in. You might get a little bigger proportion for
doing the work,
having done the work.
Yep.
And then, you know, we decide when we're ready to exercise the option, is this one that one or the other of us would like to hold? Is this one we just want to fix and flip?
Correct.
Because once we buy the property, I can then say, Lori, I want to hold it and you don't, so why don't I buy now numbers than 70
yes.
and 8. 100,000 and you only have 8.
Right.
I will buy your 8% of this property. Let's talk about how much that's going to cost me.
Exactly. Yep. You can, and then that keeps you going. It, you know, puts money back in your pocket, and you like, I'm sure it's come up before, you don't have to have the funds to do a lot of the real estate stuff that gets presented here. There's always money available, somebody to bring a different skill set that you don't have, and that's no different here. Somebody can definitely come with the funds that you need once you've done the due diligence and have presented a good option,
mm-hmm.
literally.
Mm-hmm. I was just hit with a psychic blast of listeners going, where in the world am I going to find somebody who understands options well enough to want to put money on my options?
I slogged through all that for you guys. I had these, and I was like, what do I do with them? Where am I going to find people that understand it, would want to fund them and participate? And yeah, I've done that legwork already.
Mm-hmm.
It took a while.
Well, and I'm just gonna give it away and say they probably should be members of Cincinnati RIA, because there's a call every week where there are people who understand these things,
yes,
and who are willing to partner on them. On
yep,
every
they're week. Not on Facebook. I tried.
Yeah, so
that was a swing and a miss.
CincinnatiRIA.com, yep. Ladies and gentlemen. So Anita, did you have another question?
No, you've answered it. That was perfect. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Okay, awesome. Thank you.
Hey, Vina, yeah. I would like to thank Queen Rapper for asking such a great question.
Yes, inside jokes work really well on a national radio show, Bill. Like, that's definitely, everybody just understood what you said.
I got
well,
it.
They need to join
well,
Cincinnati.
You and I did,
yeah,
and Anita did. But
yeah, just join Cincinnati RIA or Columbus RIA. Just join Cincinnati RIA, and you'll understand exactly how funny that joke really was.
Yep, because it comes up every week.
Actually, Anita has been on this show talking about wrap mortgages, so maybe more people get it than just Lori and I. So we need to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to answer some questions from the email and talk to Jonathan in Florida. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones-Cox. We got Bill Cook, options dude, on the phone. We've got Lori Wolf, options gal, on the on my left-hand side here. Lots of questions from listeners. That was why we did a part two, and now we're going to try and buzz through the ones from last week that are in the email. From Tamuk, I realize that you're buying an option, but do you worry that the homeowner will turn on you someday and claim that it was a usurious loan, and or that you're creating an impermissible cloud on the title to their homestead?
No. Not saying that that couldn't happen, but as Vina mentioned earlier, one of the things that we do have the homeowner sign is a disclosure statement or agreement, and it spells out a lot of things that they have to acknowledge, that they do understand what they're signing and agreeing to for the long term. And Bill has done this before, or has recommended it, that you do a video with the homeowner walking through, talking through this on video, giving them a copy. You keep a copy. So, and I tell people, we're going to do this in case I get hit by a bus tomorrow, and we're not going to exercise this thing for 20 years. So your children need to know what we agreed to. And if we do this by video and record it, they can play this back and understand what we were doing, you know, 20 years ago when I'm maybe not here because I did get hit by a bus.
Mm-hmm. I mean, anyone can make any claim they want in court.
Yes.
It's going to be hard to claim it was a usurious loan if you gave them money and then didn't make them make payments on it at all.
Yep.
It's going to be hard to claim that it was an impermissible cloud on title because, you know, they signed the option that you are recording, and there was no, I mean, I understand where you're coming from, Tamuk, because there's this whole controversy in the wholesale world, as there should be, about wholesalers recording their purchase contracts, which is a different thing because no money has changed hands with that. In this case, it's, I gave you a bunch of money, so how is my cloud, and you agreed to secure it with the property.
Right, it's a legitimate transaction.
So how is this an impermissible cloud on the title? It doesn't mean somebody can't, you know, decide that they regret having agreed to sell their house 20 years ago, and if they aren't going to come and talk to you about it and say, well, I regret this, and let you work something out. If they're going to go straight to the attorney, that could happen.
Right. And we covered that last week with talking about the due diligence on the person. If you get, granted, you know, 20 years from now, somebody could change, or they could have dementia, or something happens along the way. But when you're working with that person and you're getting a vibe that they're going to be deceitful later, or you this probably isn't the right tool to be using, you've got to work with good people.
Mm-hmm. Bill, any comment on that?
No, I think you guys are handling it beautifully.
Well, why don't you just take a nap then? We'll
back to eating your sunflower seeds.
we'll just hang out.
Pezzes.
Oh, Pezzes.
Pezzes.
Okay, question from Debbie from Florida. She says, this one is addressed specifically to Lori. She says, Lori, you're catching up people's payments to help them stay in the house, but the owners fell behind for a reason.
Yep.
How do you protect yourself from the owners failing to make the payments on their bank loan again after you have already put tens of thousands of dollars into catching them up?
Good question. And I asked that question. I want to know why they fell behind, because I want to know if this is a pattern or it's somebody that doesn't know how to manage their finances, and what is the likelihood that they will do this again. And, you know, as I said, we're going out a long distance on this, and we don't have a crystal ball to say what will happen in the future. But if it seems like it's an isolated instance and it's not a behavior pattern where they're frivolous with their commitments, then they would be a good candidate for the solution. But if it's somebody that is going to be disregarding this later and go into foreclosure again, or their money situation doesn't look like it's very good and that this isn't going to work out, then this is not the right solution for them. Mm-hmm. So that's going back to the due diligence on the person.
Well, and in addition, even if your option says, I can't buy it for the next 5 years, because that was how long you said you definitely wanted it, and then I can buy it for year 5 through 10, it always says in there, unless you stop making your payments,
right,
unless you stop paying your taxes, unless you stop paying your insurance, in which case I get to exercise the option,
yep,
immediately to protect my investment.
Exactly. Yeah. We're doing the best that we can today. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. But if those things happen, there's language in there that says, okay, this event occurred. Now my paperwork says I have the ability to do X, Y, and Z.
Question from Mary from Nashville. She says, I suggest that people doing an option also get an authorization to contact the loan servicer or bank. I did the three documents that were recommended on the first Peer Options radio show. Now the property owner has stopped communication. My lawyer recommends this fourth document for other options I have created since then. Do you or Bill get the authorization paperwork the same as you would if it was a subject to deal?
Actually, I do get a third-party authorization up front with the due diligence, just because in order for me to know what the true dollar amount is for their reinstatement of their bank loan, I need that permission from the homeowner to talk directly to the bank. And there's a couple other pieces that I get with that, more details I need from the bank to make things right. So yes, I do get that authorization up front so that I can talk to the bank. I really can't talk to the bank without that anyway.
Bill?
And the one thing I add, I do get a notice release, but oftentimes I'm also going to get a power of attorney specific to the property, where I can talk to the mortgage company, where I can talk to the insurance company, I can talk to on property taxes, anything to do with that property, I can step in. So not just me getting information, but where I can actually perform work that needs to get done if I need to step in and catch up a mortgage balance or whatever I need to do.
Okay. Question from Susan in Colorado. She says, she doesn't want to hear from you, Bill. She says,
are you serious?
She says, I've taken Bill's options class, so I've already heard his perspective on this.
Wow. I like her honesty.
I'll be willing to bet anything that Susan is a redhead.
I can't see her. She sent an email, but it sounds legit. She says, I would like to ask Lori's experience,
sir,
when it comes to recording the mortgage to secure option with the county. Is it difficult to get county clerks to record a mortgage to secure option?
I'm going to use Vina's words and say it depends. It really does. In Ohio, I do have a county that is difficult to get that done, and I was stumbling on that for a while. Other counties in Ohio were not a problem. I could get that recorded, no issue. So it depends on the county and probably where you are in the country and what state it is. But yes, I have had that problem before. And the solution was to e-file for the county that was difficult. When you e-file, they're not looking at it specifically, so I was able to get it recorded and move beyond that little roadblock.
And to be clear, Susan, it's not that the county recorder's looking at this and going, this is illegal, we don't want to record this. They literally look at it and go, we don't know what this is or how to record it because it says mortgage, but then there are no payments. And they can't get it. They can't get
right.
They can't get it, it's through their heads.
Right. I'm like, it's all Ohio. Why is one county okay with it and it flies right through? So it's not a legality issue. It's just a, what's the word? Yeah, they can't process
it. They just don't get it.
They don't get it. So, right. One can get it and one cannot. And that was the solution, the workaround.
Okay, one final question. You guys are going to have to limit your comments here to about a minute because we are almost out of time. Robert from Nashville says, I still don't understand why these people are selling you options. Wouldn't it be easier just to go to the bank and borrow the money they need?
Robert, I can't qualify. Can I finish?
No, I mean, no, I think that's a good enough
answer. Well, I know. I mean, if they could, they would have done that. But, you know, for what I'm seeing and doing, I'm working with people that have a financial hardship. So their credit score isn't going to be up there. I mean, banks generally want to lend to good borrowers
and who are not in foreclosure.
Correct. So nobody's going to touch them when they've got a foreclosure pending. So that isn't an option for them, and literally.
I think Bill has a second answer to why don't they just go get a loan that he's going to have to express in 20 seconds.
It's because they just don't want the payment. They don't want the debt. So I talked about a septic tank issue on last week's show. They have perfect credit. They can go get the loan. But having someone else pay for the septic tank, and they don't have to pay for that, but they're going to give up some appreciation. They were happy with that, but their credit was perfect.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So, listeners, if you want to hear more about options, we're not doing a part three.
I thought you were. I really thought it was going to happen.
If you want to hear more about options, you just need to attend the National Real Estate Summit on October 31st through November 3rd here in Cincinnati. You can get more information about that at oreaconvention.com. We'll be back next week with different information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.